There are so many different hypnosis styles out there. There are the more direct approaches, indirect approaches, the Ericksonian methods. And of the Ericksonian methods, there are themselves various different approaches. Then we have paternal, maternal, permissive, not permissive, and. And depending on who you talk to, you can even stir up a battle between different factions. Welcome to HypnoTalks, Question and Answers, and our mini-series on hypnotic techniques. Today we are tackling the various different hypnotic styles. My name is Axel Hombach. I'm a hypnotist and trainer for self-hypnosis in Cologne, Germany. Right now I'm sitting here in London, together with Dr. John Butler, the director of the HCI, the Hypnotherapy Training International. Hello, John.
Hello, Axel. Hello, listeners.
So, you have talked last week in your class already a little bit about various hypnotic styles. You mentioned the direct hypnosis, the more indirect hypnosis, the permissive style of Dave Ellman, who most people would not bring together with permissive styles.
Yes.
And if you could give a short overview before we go into a few details, what kinds of hypnotic styles are out there with your 40 years of experience background?
Well, again, keeping it quite simple.
As simple as possible.
Yes, never simplistic, but as simple as possible, as Einstein would say. Now, yeah. When you look at these debates that go on about styles, a lot of it really is unhelpful, in my opinion. It's a bit like with Bruce Lee saying, you know, if you have a style, you're trying to say that that's the way the world works and it should respond to you according to your style. But as you know, the client in front of you is not there to just fit your style. They may be very different to the way you might have imagined they were going to be. They may have qualities and attributes and so on for which your approach may not be very effective. It's like somebody having a style in martial arts, but when they go and meet an efficient street fighter, that person has kind of no real style, maybe. Just is so adaptable, so flexible, and you're rigidly there with your style trying to cope, and frankly, you're not going to have a good time of it. So I believe that flexibility, adaptability, is really what we're dealing with. Dealing with what emerges, as Gil Boyne said, and dealing according then to the needs of the client. If the client needs you to be more softer, more indirect, you are able to do that very effectively. If they need you to be more direct, you're able to be that as well. So really, a very good therapist is neither direct nor indirect. They are both and everywhere else, everything in between on that continuum. So we start, or at least I believe in starting, as I remember Gil saying this several times, start with being in a healthy level of directiveness. Then you can soften when the needs of the client indicate that.
When you say soften, you can still be direct and soft at the same time.
Oh yes, we'll come to that in a moment, because again, it's so simplistic, oversimplified the way people think about this. Now, the client has that fear of authority, some great rebellion against authority, you know, they're still in their teenage rebellion in part of their mind. Well, you can soften according to the needs of the client. But otherwise, we start with a positive, appropriate, respectful directiveness in our approach. And why? Well, because, well, it's often the most effective. Many clients need you to be that way. I have asked many clients about their experience in hypnotherapy and what they preferred in the programming. And, you know, actually, time and time again, they said they much preferred the more direct approach, the direct suggestions. They want to hear those delivered. These are true statements about human nature, human potential, and what they're going to do in their individual cases as a result of those programming. They need those clear, authoritatively given to the mind, as opposed to some kind of indirect wishy-washy, which actually in many people's cases raises a kind of suspicious feeling. Why are they being so soft? It sometimes conveys a level of manipulation or indecisiveness, weakness, etc. on the part of the therapist that is counterproductive. So, as I say, flexibility. And when we look at directiveness, what is wrong with being direct, clear, open, honest with the client? As if that's somehow a crime, according to some therapists, who say it must be indirect. Yeah. Why should I be so, you know, having to go around the back door, be kind of sneaky even, that the mind of the person is so damaged and so weird that the only way I can help them is by making it all so indirect? Most people do not need that, do not benefit from it as much as with a direct approach. Now, for years, it's been associated with Erickson, but as I say, good therapists, and you've mentioned Ellman, they understood the principle of being more direct or indirect. You hear that in the recordings, which I publish still, how he adapts and adopts the indirect or more direct approach. And he refers to that. He said, well, I wouldn't use a very direct approach with this person, but in this case, and I remember once he's talking about the brat, the spoiled brat child, he said, there's a case now with a child where I'm going to have to be more direct. And he's explicitly saying that I will use a very direct approach, maybe in the induction with that child. The child needs the voice of authority. We all respond to authority, whether people like to admit that or not. Authority is not authoritarian. It is a very positive trait. To me, author means the creator. An authoritative person is a creative person. They are expert in what they're doing. And frankly, if we as therapists are not expert in our work, well, we shouldn't really be there doing the work with clients. So that's now, of course, just being a bit philosophical about this issue. But let's understand how come authoritative has become a dirty word in therapy almost. And if you think back to people who wrote all this stuff about the authoritarian personality, how flawed some of that is. And of course, there is abuse of authority. Benevolent authority is one of the things the human mind responds very positively to.
That is what parents should be.
Exactly. And what has often been lacking with them in their lives, there was a non-existent or an abusive parent, or a very overprotective, a parent who was so busy trying to get their approval from the child or approval in life generally that they spoiled the child. They never encouraged them to discover their strength. They never guided, corrected them even. And so it's actually one of the needs of the client then with the therapist that the therapist assumes a positive, benevolent, inverted commas, parenting style.
Which is also the ideal leader. A leadership should be
correct,
positive, and
yes,
represent an authority.
Absolutely. And when you understand from working with the subconscious with over hundreds and hundreds of cases, unlike Freud with his 20 to 30 cases, you'll see over and over again, Axel, that the subconscious mind can get a bit stuck. It can be in a real negative loop, of course, and going downhill, so to speak, because of the negative impressions been made upon it. We need a counterbalancing force. The mind sometimes at the subconscious level needs a little push, or a stronger push sometimes. And again, the directive approach can do that, where the indirect is often very ineffective. Now, I said, and let's always remember that we are neither direct nor indirect, because that's limiting ourselves. We are both. We are very flexible, adaptive to the client. It's a bit like the oak tree in the storm. It may be blown over. The willow or the little reed bending in the wind survives maybe the hurricane even. So when we're adaptive with the client, flexible, we're not really being weak. And I think that's, again, something to be careful about, that we have a simplistic view of what being direct and indirect is like. When you listen to Ellman, for a start, Ellman, when he is being apparently softer, listen closely and you'll still hear that strong intentionality. Do it, do it, do it. Get on with it.
This is something that I realized when I listened to his recordings. He seems to be very soft when he speaks, but you feel a very high-powered pressure behind that.
Very influencing, very persuasive.
Yeah.
All the more strong because it seems soft.
Yeah.
Of course, he came from the marketing world.
And he was a radio speaker for so many years.
He understood the power of suggestion, which is the power of persuasion and influence.
Yeah.
And when we think of, instead of the word suggestion, which can seem kind of manipulative, words like directive, instructions, commands even, which can be more soft or stronger, depending on, again, the needs of the client. Therapists need to remember you're talking to the subconscious, primarily with hypnotherapy.
Which has a very childlike character.
Absolutely. And it needs that clear, positive directiveness.
And when you tell a child, you can do this and you can do that, well, what will be the result?
Confusion often, lack of guidance.
Compared to do this.
Yes. When you're working with teenagers who've gone off the rails, very often, and I've worked with gangsters, you know, young men who've gone into the gang world, they say, I regret how I've behaved, the choices I've made, but you know, nobody ever told me really right from wrong, give me clear guidance and so on. And that's a failure then of parenting, particularly at the subconscious level. So what I'm saying here is we're being corrective, direct, clear with the client's subconscious as far as possible. When we need to correct false ideas, for example, yeah, I need cigarettes to relax or cope with life, or I need discomfort food. No, we're programming the mind to a different set of ideas and beliefs that have been there for years now, those negative beliefs. So you can see why. Our message needs to be direct, clear, honest, straightforward, and no beating around the bush with it for most cases.
And if possible, should not offer alternative interpretations.
Correct, which only generate confusion and add to the client's burdens. So now let's talk about where the whole myth of indirectiveness has come from. I said long before Ellman even, people had understood that the way suggestions were given, the language, the semantics, the syntax, all that's highly important for the therapist to develop their skills of language. The tonality in the voice, all the qualities of the voice that need to be developed. Then they understood that some people are better influenced by softening the suggestion at times using a so-called more indirect method. And they would call that then, we have the authoritarian versus permissive style, the maternal versus paternal, direct versus indirect. And a lot of that has been, I think that debate has been misleading over the years, counterproductive for therapy. One of the worst parts of the history of hypnotherapy is when people said, I'm an Ericksonian, of course, which Erickson didn't want, Ericksonian therapists. He never recommended there be Ericksonian schools and the Ericksonian style. He said, creativity is my style, which is really no style in a sense, being flexible, adaptive, and so on, being yourself as a therapist, not copying him. However, the myth of indirection went on for a long time, till finally even some of the Ericksonians, themselves, were forced to look at the data, and other psychiatrists who'd learned more direct versus more so-called Ericksonian looked at the data and concluded there were no real benefits to the use of indirect over direct suggestion methods. So again, the fallacy is there. Now, of course, we have to talk about, and maybe this is not the right time to go into metaphor, embedding suggestions there in that, in ways of telling stories.
We are going to do that in another episode.
Absolutely. Well, therapists learn about how to tell stories. They learn the power of metaphor, and they learn about, hopefully, in their training, if it's a proper training, how to give very effective direct programming instructions and how to use indirect methods where that would be necessary or appropriate. Always remember, Erickson was working with the more difficult cases for most of his life as a psychiatrist. And these are the ones he's famous for his creativity with. He worked with people who had severe mental health issues in the institution in which he worked. And one can understand in some cases where the mind is very disordered, let's call it that, in a very unhealthy, severe mental health issues. Yes, sometimes you would not be giving them a very direct suggestion. It could feel for them like they were being taken over, their minds were being overwhelmed, just as they may had semi-paranoid, delusionary beliefs that the government is stealing my thoughts or other people are invading me. So you can see why in those circumstances he would develop these more complex, convoluted approaches to influencing the subconscious. But, I mean, how ridiculous it is to transfer that to the general public. Because most people are not suffering from elements of psychosis, paranoid delusionary beliefs, you know, paranoid schizophrenia or whatever. So why use methods that they don't need? And so, again, it was a mistaken view. I feel some therapists felt either too weak, doubting of themselves, fearful of giving direct suggestions, with the belief perhaps in their mind, now if those suggestions are not accepted, I'll feel kind of embarrassed, I'll feel inadequate, so I'll take a very indirect approach and I'll tell him, well, you mightn't have felt you were hypnotized at all. You mightn't have felt you were in the trance. You mightn't have felt those suggestions were having effects. But believe me, they are working for you. They're working in the background, very indirectly. And eventually, they'll produce results. So over the years, and particularly with Ericksonianism, which I think was very much not what Erickson would have taught and practiced, that was at its peak. Clients would tell me, well, I've given up going to see this fellow. I've had 8 sessions with him over the last 8 or 9 weeks. And he speaks very indirectly in kind of parables. And he speaks in a way that I'm not supposed to understand. And I do find it confusing. And I ask him, well, when will I see results? When will there be any benefits for this? And they would say, well, it's going to take a long time because we're working indirectly rather than some authoritarian, old-fashioned hypnosis, which is not good for you. They would denigrate classical and other forms of hypnotherapy. And they'd say, well, eventually it'll come out. Eventually you'll be influenced. So 8 or 9 months later, they're fed up.
Probably.
And they want some real programming.
They were probably even told that it does something to you.
Yeah.
I remember that from my NLP trainings, that we learned their so-called Ericksonian hypnosis, and it was always you can or you cannot. So it was about giving your client more options.
Yes.
As if they needed more options. Mm-hmm. And also putting them in a way that also believing that the subconscious mind knows what is best for the client. But would the client come to us if the subconscious mind already knows the solution?
The danger is letting the client drift further into confusion. Well, one might say the subconscious where the problem is, so therefore it has the resources to answer it, to deal with it. And you might say, well, your inner mind, your intuitive nature can guide you. For to say then, to extrapolate from there and say, all right, oh, well, now you can just let the subconscious do, get on with the work and do it. No, the subconscious is leading him into terrible errors. It's the subconscious power of the mind that's driving him into alcoholism and so on.
So maybe the subconscious mind may have all the resources, but it doesn't know how to use them in the most productive way.
Absolutely, absolutely. A lot of the time with our clients, we are encouraging them to learn to be more assertive and effective and direct in dealing with their issues rather than avoiding them. But let's be very clear, we are not encouraging anybody to be abusive, dominating with clients in their language or in their behavior. No, we're very adapted with clients, flexible, respectful, and dealing with them according to their needs. And one of them is often their subconscious needs some clear, good, healthy, life-affirming suggestions and programming.
And with that direction.
Correct.
As we are already coming to an end of our episode, please summarize those different styles into a few sentences.
All right. Okay. Well, a good therapist responds to the needs of the client. Their style, if you want to call it that word, responds accordingly. Being more direct when that's appropriate, being more indirect where that might be needed, which is in those rarer cases. And so being flexible, I believe, and being adaptive on the continuum from direct to indirect, according as the demands of the situation, dealing with what emerges. And a good therapist learns the power of direct, clear, good communication and starts off on that basis, softening where appropriate or needed. And finally, one last point to put in, if you start with a softer approach and then recognize you have to get stronger and clear with the client, that may be seen as a rejection at that point, where if you're starting at a healthy level of directiveness, being direct and clear is always healthy in my opinion, but if you start on that base and need to soften, you can do that too.
And if you want to learn more about how to be that flexible, it is a good idea to listen to and watch some of the masters of that field. For example, listen to the examples of the recordings of Dave Ellman, where he gives a lot of demonstrations with clients, and you can hear how flexible he reacts on the spot to the needs of the client. And also the videos of Gil Boyne, where you can see how flexible Gil Boyne uses more paternal, more maternal, more direct, more indirect approaches and mixes them into, you could almost say, an artwork.
Absolutely. And find a good trainer who is able to teach you that in the classroom as you listen to them and work with them, and they guide you, supervise you intensely in your practice sessions. They will help you develop that great flexibility you need for programming. And lastly, just to say, in the case of Erickson, there are numerous instances where he shows just how direct he could be at a level of directiveness that most therapists would be afraid to use.
Yeah, there is this case of the obese woman, but we are not going into that now, because we are at the end of our episode. And anybody who wants to know more about the fat, obese woman can at any time contact us and, of course, visit your class.
And other similar cases with Erickson.
Thank you so much, John.
Thank you, Axel. Thank you very much again to our listeners for listening in and sending us messages.
I'm very happy to talk to you again in our next episode of Hypnotic Techniques. We are going to talk about self-hypnosis, and that will also conclude our mini-series on hypnotic techniques.
Good. Speak to you in 5 minutes about this, or less.
Talk to you in 5 minutes.